Hello, friends. Chris here, your editor and sometimes host of Thaka with Advantage. I just wanted to let you know that we now have a Patreon for the show. You can find it at patreon.com, THAC0WA. That's patreon.com/THAC0WA. Now, we got one level for this Patreon. It's $5. And for that, you'll get access to our Patreon Discord channel to talk with us, at least bi-weekly PDF releases, which will include one of the following: some new spells, we're working on alternate spellbook, a Heroes of Havel's Way PDF, including setting material, game design stuff, and things like that, and potentially other game design systems and thoughts from myself, Jared, or Ange, or maybe even some guest creators once we have a few bucks. You'll also get a bonus podcast called Chris's Havel. This is a podcast of my GM thoughts on episodes of Heroes of Havel's Way. By the way, the Heroes of Havel's Way is a new actual play series that we are making, me, Ange, and Jared, that's 5th edition inspired. There will also be a monthly Discord hangout with myself and potentially Jared and Ange, and you'll get a shout out on the show. Furthermore, this is really just to help us make Thaka with Advantage. I try really hard to make sure that the edit and mix on this show sounds as good as humanly possible, and the Patreon will help pay for that and for Ange and Jared's time. Well, with that, thank you for listening, and let's get on with the show.
And now we present to you Thaka with Advantage.
Welcome to Thaka with Advantage. We're two friends that have been playing D&D a long time. While we both love lots of other RPGs, D&D lets us practice our diplomacy skills. Hi, I'm Ange, and I have been gaming for over 3 decades. A decade ago, I started writing for Gnome Stew, and I eventually started running the podcast, The Gnomecast. At some point, they also put me in charge of everything as head gnome. So there you go.
And I'm Jared, the review gnome at Gnome Stew. In addition to writing reviews at Gnome Stew, I've got my own site, whatdoiknowjr.com, where I write additional reviews and opinion pieces on a variety of RPGs. And I've been gaming since Ghostbusters was released in theaters.
That's dating yourself.
After we look at the games we're running in the campaign journal, we'll be talking about when something goes wrong at the table. Then we'll have some recommendations of D&D-related content for you to check out in our downtime research segment.
Now stand by for station identification. This is WDND The Role Player. Now we're going to McElroy McKinney and the Bardic College.
So in the Handling Troublesome Players section of the first edition Dungeon Master's Guide, there was this bit of advice that the book gave to curtail metagaming. It was to tell players that they expressly can't do something that a metagaming character suggested. That was so that the metagaming character would shut up. There is nothing in D&D that says that Gygax played some of his first games of D&D with his kids more than a rule that is the equivalent of, I will turn this car around right now.
Let me just finish up this campaign journal.
So, hey, the drought has lifted, and not only because it's been raining and storming constantly lately. In addition to Jared's game, which he's going to talk about in his segment, I've gotten to play my buddy's Cygnus de Gur game, along with a session of Sean Kelly's B.S. Landia Shadow Dark game. Cygnus de Gur, the Monkeys of War, had a little bit of a delayed start as we basically tried to remember where we parked. As a reminder, heading into the end of May, we put the game on hiatus because the GM was about to get married and half of us were going to Origins, which was right after the wedding. So we just kind of put everything on hold. And this was our first session back from all of those shenanigans. Picking up a campaign after a hiatus is always a little bit of a struggle.
Yeah.
In the last session, we had cleared out some Sharans that had been pretending to be a Temple of Mistra. The problem was we had kind of forgotten the reason we had gone to that region in the first place. With a little help from the GM, we remembered that we had acquired a cursed item, a cursed shard, and were trying to find its origin because the shard seemed to want to be returned to its place of origin. We did a very Indiana Jones-esque red line travel to get from the Temple of Mistra to the desert, and very soon found a town that the cursed shard seemed to be pointing at. The rest of the session was mostly talking to people in the town and figuring out what was going on. Unfortunately, my air conditioning is out, and it was a little hot in here, and I was kind of grumpy. So I was letting my friends drive the investigation with the occasional snarky comment. I apologize to everyone at the end for being less than my best, and they all understood, but still it was like, I don't have the patience to talk to people right now.
What are these other humans I have to interact with?
I know. It's like, I'm here because I love all you people, but people. Our next session should have us entering this old keep slash tomb and find out what they've been digging up that has possibly been causing these earthquakes that have been plaguing the town, and possibly where this cursed shard needs to go. There was some sort of reference to a heart or something. In the Shadowdark game, again, with us getting into summer, it's been hard to get sessions together. I think Sean tried to schedule about 4 or 5 sessions in the month of June, and I think only 1 or 2 actually went off. Last week, it was like, hey, do people want to play? And enough of us said, yeah, let's play, that we basically decided to just go west and follow the shoreline rather than having a specific destination or thing we wanted to investigate. Now, the funny thing is, Sean's been running this for a couple of months now, and he's been rolling on random encounter tables for the whole campaign. And prior to this session, he could count the number of times a random encounter happened on one hand out of multiple sessions. This session of us just wandering along the shoreline had 3 random encounters roll up. The first was our first camping night. It happened to be the last watch where my wizard Inora was up and keeping track of things, heard something in the distance moving, ended up, you know, it's breaking dawn light. It's still dark, but enough light that I could kind of see. And there's this giant creature that looks like 2 people are riding on it. And it has, like, a small tail in the front and a long tail in front. It was an elephant, okay? We didn't call it an elephant, but it was an elephant. Decided to basically lay low and just let it pass. The people on the elephant with the people on the ground with torches seemed to be heading northeast, which we think means they were heading towards the keep, which is another place that needs to be investigated, but we just let them go. The next day, as we're traveling along, we came across a small collection of goblins who were diving into the bay for something. Lost treasure, clams, I don't know. We didn't get close enough to really interact with them. We debated it for a little bit, but decided to let them be. And then, on the weather table, we got a thunderstorm rolling in, so we ended up seeking out shelter. We rolled well enough to find a small cave in a hillside nestled between the roots of a giant tree, and it seemed like a great place to camp until another random encounter was rolled and we got attacked by some giant blood-sucking bat things. Now, mind you, this party, we were 4 players, and because we were just wandering rather than going to a specific location, we had 2 wizards and 2 clerics. In this fight, both clerics ended up going down, but thankfully we did enough damage to make the things run away, and the other wizard rolled well enough on his check to stabilize the 2 clerics. So we basically just had to, we're going to let them rest, and hopefully they wake up in the morning, and hopefully nothing else comes. It was actually a really, really fun session in that very old school style.
Apparently the beach is very popular this time of year.
Yeah.
Now, were the vampire bats as bad as the dragonbane vampire bats?
They were pretty bad.
Worst creatures in the entire game. We finally got to play our Thursday game again. Our PCs had a magical map that they were using to navigate Set's domain, and they had to use Intelligence Arcana to navigate with. This led to us finding out that our new Ratatosk bard is actually better at Arcana than our Dragonborn.
Our Dragonborn fighter.
Yes, but he's also very scholarly, and also he's now a little bit upset because he is not the smartest one about Arcana now.
He's not the best at something. This bothers him.
What we were doing with the navigation, I decided to try out the extended task rules that Cubicle 7 debuted in A Life Well Lived, which is basically you set a goal number and then you set a difficulty. And every time you roll over that goal, you subtract the number that they were over from the goal. And then once the goal is at zero, they have completed what they were doing. I actually sat down and did all of this math to figure this out because it's like, okay, I want them to probably have one encounter. If they roll really well, they won't have one. But if they roll average, you know, it should take them just a little bit over an hour. The first couple rolls, I was really worried that my math was off because I think the first one was just barely over the DC and the second one was way under.
I thought the first roll was pretty good and the second roll failed.
Yeah, I just know that one of them added back to the goal, basically. Yeah. Because they took an hour in that interval, we did have an encounter. This was my night to get experimental. So I decided a lot of times when people resolve an exploration challenge, it is like a roll. Like, it is really cold out, so, you know, roll to see if you picked up a level of exhaustion or roll to see if you took damage. And I wanted to try a more dynamic thing that was still exploration and not a fight. So we had a magical thunderstorm roll in that we stayed in initiative for so that we could track what everybody was doing from round to round. And I told them up front, it's going to be three rounds. You know, I didn't want to like hide that from them to where they're trying to figure out like, how long is this going to last? No, it's going to be three rounds and we'll see how this goes. The storm would go on initiative count 20. I had everybody make luck checks, which was just, you know, a D20, 11 or higher, you know, you were successful. Whoever didn't get lucky that round, one of the lightning bolts was going to hit.
I was initially like, but my dex save. I shouldn't take any damage from a lightning hit. I'm a rogue.
But the dex save would help if the lightning targeted you. But yeah, it was neat because I wanted to see, like, in real time, some of the resources that PCs have are good for things outside of combat, but a lot of times they don't get a chance to use them. And the Ratatosk proved that exactly because he held an action to use Dimension Door when the lightning bolt was about to hit him. And I love that because it was
Misty Step.
Oh, Misty Step. But yeah, it was basically using a resource to teleport away from this weather effect. And it felt more immediate to me. Now, I don't want to get too far ahead of this because I have a player that was actually in that encounter. So if I ran another environmental thing in that same format, like I tell you how many rounds it's going to be, it goes off, you know, on 20, which I kind of picked because that's what like lair actions do. Do you think this would be something that you would, it's not something you would get tired of?
I think if it was overused, like if we were doing it every session, that would get a little tiring. But I thought it was pretty interesting for what we were engaging with. I think my only thing is, like, I guess I'd like to see something more than the luck roll, but I understand what you were doing with the luck roll. Like, it felt too, like, oh no. And that just might be because we're spoiled as players. You know, oh my God, how dare I fail at a thing?
I can't influence it other than random luck. Although technically, because I phrased it as a luck save, anything that affects saves, you actually could apply to that. You just don't have any ability bonus or proficiency to add to it.
I believe Marin actually did use his Indomitable to reroll one of those luck saves.
Yeah. So once they got to their destination, I tried another experiment, and that is because I like the trope of the Sphinx asking you a riddle and not letting you pass. I do not like coming up with riddles. I do not like subjecting people to riddles. It's not that riddles are intrinsically bad. It's that I have anxiety and I know other people do too. And there are times when a riddle seems very simple. And because you're in the moment, you freeze up and then you're afraid you look like an idiot in front of everybody because it was so simple. So I would rather just subvert all of that.
And the thing is, too, with riddles, there is a presupposition of common knowledge that is not always accurate.
Yes.
It's very easy to think something is super simple, makes total sense to you, and then you've put it in front of your players and they are in completely different directions that make total logical sense to themselves. I get a little irritated, but it's so simple. It's just common sense. There is no such thing as common sense.
Yeah.
It's all what you grew up with. It's all what you've been exposed to. And not everybody has the same reference material in their head.
Speaking of the day job, I mean, that's the whole thing about standardized tests and cultural biases that are built into those things where other people have different experiences. Those don't mean that those are lesser experiences. They're different experiences than the person that is writing the questions out. So,
yes.
With all of that set up, what I decided is, what is a riddle made out of? So I said, instead of having them just make one check, like, here's a riddle, what is the DC for it? I came up with one part was going to be something referencing religion, another thing was going to be something referencing history, and then there was going to be a witty way that those two things were combined to answer this riddle. And that way, even though we didn't have an actual riddle, they still had an idea of what was being said. So I had them make the first two checks, and then if those two were fine, you would have made the last one with advantage, but that is not what happened. So it was basically, it was intelligence, religion, intelligence, history, and then it was going to be wisdom, insight to bring all of that together to figure out what the Sphinx wanted to hear. Because that's another thing about what we were just saying with riddles. It really is about reading what the person who told you the riddle thinks is the right answer.
Yes.
So we did all of this. You didn't make the history check. So you went into the wisdom roll without advantage. That one didn't go well, but Marin granted Kazina his inspiration so she could re-roll. And I liked how this worked out because I asked him what he did for it. And basically it was like he remembered a historical fact that they forgot when they were trying to figure out that part of the riddle, which is what let Kazina re-roll, and she was successful. So I liked how that sequence played out. I know we're kind of on the same page with riddles anyway, so.
They're a nice trope, but in actual play, they're not always as fun as you think they might be.
Yeah. So the Vulture Sphinx, here's the answer to the riddle, lets them through the gate.
I need to point out here that Jared did an absolutely amazing Skeksis voice for the Vulture Sphinx. It was glorious.
If you give me something with like a vulturish head, I am going to immediately go into Skeksis mode. So it flew off and they entered the area that they were trying to get into. This is the region of Set's domain where he pens up all of the souls that he catches on the sticks that aren't meant for him. And he just keeps them bundled up here because Set is basically, at least as far as he is portrayed in some of the D&D material and in the Midgard material, he's kind of just a misanthrope. Like, he's very upset that he doesn't get to be one of the main heroes in the Pantheon, so he's just going to be a jerk over in his corner of the multiverse.
He found these souls, he's gonna keep them.
Exactly. So, guarding all of these souls that were in various cages, there was a devil. And since they got in because they knew the riddle, the devil was okay with them visiting because clearly they wouldn't know the answer to the riddle unless they were supposed to be here. That's the way these things work. So they walk in, they find the sea dragon soul that they were supposed to be freeing. They talk to her for a little bit. And because some of them are telepathic, they can have these conversations behind someone's back where they're like, should we just stab the devil in the back? Should we try and kill him now? Or should we just rush him really fast? And Kazina decided she was going to try and appeal to the devil's lawful nature, which, by the way, I like to think that that was a byproduct of our Demons and Devils episode.
I mean, you can also say it's a byproduct of Kazina's journeys to Nether Realms, where she dealt with some devils and, you know, found out about her relatives.
Which is a good segue back into what happened, because Kazina wanted to convince this devil to stand down. And she wanted to approach it by pointing out lawfulness and that it's not lawful for Set to keep these souls because he's not entitled to them. To which the devil countered, I just work here. Like, I am fulfilling my contract, so I don't get to make a judgment on whether or not these souls are supposed to be here. But Kazina rolled really well on her charisma check. The devil rolled really poorly on his wisdom check. But my thought is, this is his commission that he has been given. So it's not going to be easy, but I was going to give her a way out. So I told Ange, if you would like to drop Kazina's grandfather's name, he will assume that you are using that authority to tell him to drop this contract. And
yep.
Ange deliberated a bit and Kazina dropped her grandfather's name, so the devil let them through to free all of the souls.
He also asked Kazina to say a good word about him when she went back home.
I'm sure there's no campaign development that I'm going to use that for.
There's going to be no mess around and find out about that.
So the PCs had a pearl that they could store the sea dragon's soul in, and they were trying to convince her to go into it, but because she had been trapped in that dragon orb for so long, she did not want to be in any other container. But they did manage to convince her to do it, which is good, because had they not done that, there was a magical tether taking her to the other location that they had decided not to go to in Set's domain, where they would have had to go to release this tether from her so that she could leave. So it's good that you talked her into the pearl.
Because the pearl just severed the tether.
The funny thing about that is, had you gone to the other location, the answer to the riddle would have been at that other location. So at least you wouldn't have been making any of those checks. So they free all of these souls. They hightail it out. They navigate it out rather well. They did not have any intentional encounters. And they make their way back to the little trade port on the side of the sticks outside of Set's domain. All of the souls are commissioning Morenolos to take them to their actual afterlife. So that made their river giant friend a little bit upset, because they generated more business for these Morenolos that are just dominating the market of shipping things on the sticks. And then they began sailing home. On their way home, they did run into a spirit troll that was trying to exact a toll. Spirit troll didn't last very long. He might have done a little bit of damage if he had gotten a chance to do more than like one round's worth of anything, but he wasn't going to survive with all of you pounding on him.
Yeah, that fight lasted like a round and a half.
Once they arrived back home, their contact, Ambassador Darius, who is still kind of floored that they got a commission to go do something from a god and that they destroyed a dragon orb, and he's still processing all of this, but he let them know that their next mission is going to have them going undercover. He can't give them any details, and they'll have to go speak with their patron to get the full details in her domain so that no one can overhear what's going on. And that's where we left off.
Kazina's sitting there looking at Marin, who in one of our very early sessions announced to the bad guys that he was there to thwart them. Ivy, who is not subtle. She's Norse. They don't do subtle.
She likes explosions.
And then there's the new bard, the squirrel. I don't know what they're thinking, wanting to send this crew undercover.
The other thing that's amusing is, at that point when I had you meet back up with Ambassador Darius, it had occurred to me, he hasn't interacted with the Ratatosk yet. So all of a sudden he's like, I know exactly who these people are that I'm sending on this mission. Oh, wait, what is that?
Where's the dwarf? Who's this?
So I am looking forward to our next session. And this Saturday, I have my next Curse of Strahd game with my daughter's group.
Excellent.
Welcome to the Dungeon Master's Workshop.
So moving on into our main topic. We all love role-playing games, but sometimes things go wrong at the table. Whether it's two players butting heads, a disagreement about a DM's rule decision, or some other problem, if you play long enough, you will run into problems at the table. We wanted to take some time and talk about our own painful encounters with the problems at the table, and what you can do about them when you run into something similar. So, let's talk about our experiences and what we did in these situations and what we could have done better in these situations. You take it, Jared.
All right, let's start off with the tale of the paladin and the rogue coming into conflict, which probably doesn't sound that strange to people that have been in parties that have a paladin and a rogue, especially before 5th edition.
Before 3rd edition. If you played before the year 2000 and you had two players at the table suggest one was going to play a paladin and one was going to play a rogue, you probably had other people at the table telling them, no, you can't do that. We're not going to have both of you in the party.
What was interesting about this situation, I know, like, what happens often is the paladin is the one being kind of heavy-handed and telling the rogue they can't steal this or they need to give this back or whatever. In this instance, the rogues player was telling the paladin he's risking too much. You know, we can't go on the side mission to save extra people. You know, we have a very specific thing we need to do. We need to be pragmatic and get that done. And maybe after we get that done, you know, we can go off and save people. And it was all in character until it wasn't. And I could tell that things were getting a little bit heated. And when people stopped using character names and started using each other's names, that's when I knew there was probably an issue going on. So we had to take a break, and I ended up emailing everybody and having them email each other and have everybody talk out what was going on. And it was very awkward. They all came back to the table. They didn't fight again, but it always kind of felt like until the end of that campaign, things were still a little bit tense for the rest of it. What kind of exacerbated the situation is we were playing at the game store owned by the Rogues player. So it made me feel a little bit more awkward calling him out to say, you know what, just stop it. You're being a little bit over the top.
That makes for an awkward dynamic at the table.
Yeah. So what would your advice be to help me out on this if you were there when this happened?
I will say this is the way of things. A lot of the problems you can run into at the table that end up being interpersonal like this are it's in character until it's not.
Yeah.
And it is sometimes very difficult to see when it is crossing that threshold. So one of the things I like to do, whether I'm a GM running the game or a player in the game, when I see that type of conflict happening between two characters, I will try and interject to make sure that it's staying in character.
Mm-hmm.
Because that type of conversation, that makes perfect sense for the mercenary rogue to be like, no, we can't take time to do that. And the good paladin being like, no, we need to save as many people as we can.
That's actually good conflict.
Yeah, that is a trope. That is a thing that can happen in games. The problem is you have to have one of those players willing to give in on their side. In those situations, I would say you need the rogue player to be like, I don't agree with this, but since you're not letting it go, okay, fine, we're going to go save these people, but I'm going to bitch about it the entire way there. That's the way that type of thing should go. But we're human beings, and not every player is going to have the same maturity level. Not every player is going to have the same ability to separate their character's desires from their desires. And you can end up with these situations that end up spiraling out of control. So I guess my biggest piece of advice would be as a GM, pay attention to when those inter-character conflicts might start building up to something a little more.
The other bit of context is the rogues player was very old school, but I'm going to say he was 90s old school. What I mean by that is he was very much a player when RPGs were starting to tell you to roleplay more, but they weren't telling you how to do it. Roleplay with passion. Roleplay all the time, constantly.
Yeah.
And his idea was if you aren't in conflict with someone else, you're not roleplaying. Like if the two of you are just agreeing on what to do, that's not roleplaying. So he would kind of escalate some of these situations.
Yeah, I haven't seen that in a while, but I've played with people like that, and it's not fun. I don't play for PvP.
Yeah.
I don't play for character versus character conflict. I don't mind a little argument here or there, but I'm here to play a big damn hero. I don't want to be fighting with the people I'm supposed to be cooperating with.
The things that I learned from this and tried to take forward were a few things. The first thing is understand the power dynamic that you have going on if you are playing someplace that is not your own.
Mm-hmm.
For some people, you are going to be, if you are running a game and somebody is challenging you, but you're at their place, you may not feel as comfortable keeping a hand on the game to keep it under control when that person ends up being the problem.
Yeah.
If you start feeling like that power dynamic is being used against you, like granted, some people it will be absolutely fine. But if you're starting to feel like that person is kind of using that leverage on purpose to dominate the game, you should definitely look at leaving that venue.
I have a buddy who moved out west, found a new gaming group, and everything seemed to be going great at first. They played at this one guy's house. It was a great house for gaming, had a great space for it. But over the course of a few months, he realized that the guy who owned the house was kind of a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily the same, you know, like has to fight with everybody type of thing. But he would do things in game that were obnoxious. And when they started kind of pushing back on it, he was kind of like, it's my house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wasn't the GM.
Yeah.
But it was his house. So his house, his rules. And it eventually exploded into a full-blown argument between my friend and that guy. And he ended up being like, I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm out. And several of the other players were like, you know what? We're out too. And they started their own group together someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't as nice of a space, but was a much more pleasant game.
And I know this isn't an option for everyone. And before 2020, I would have said it wasn't an option for me. But if you are having a problem finding a venue and you can't host at your place, online is much more viable now than it has ever been.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do have the bandwidth to look into what it would take to run a game online, that may be something to look into if you're having issues like that. The other thing that I will say is this was back when I was running Pathfinder, so we did not have a session zero. We sat around and talked about what class everybody was going to be, and we kind of said, oh, this adventure path is about this, so it would be good to have these types of characters. But we didn't sit down and have everybody, you know, explain what their characters were. We didn't talk about boundaries. We didn't talk about what should be off the table. We didn't do any of that. I would like to think that now, in that session zero, you would have had somebody saying, my rogue is going to be really pragmatic. My paladin is going to want to save every person they see. Okay, I'm just going to let you know we'll butt heads, but that'll be it. You know, that's going to happen.
Right.
And that's something you kind of work out as a trope that is going to happen in the campaign because you both know what characters each other is playing at that point.
I don't know that that would have happened with the rogue player you described.
Oh, no, probably not.
But you probably would have at least had an idea of what you were getting into.
Yeah.
With session zero.
It might have warned the paladin's player that he might run into that situation. The other thing I was going to say from a player's standpoint, this also made me more cognizant that if I start being very emotional as a character in a game, I try to find the first opportunity to say, this is my character's feelings. These are not Jared's feelings. And that actually came up in Angie's Coriolis game one time.
Yes. Yes. We had everyone starting to worry, like, oh my God, is are we losing Jared? Is Jared starting to, oh boy, I think we're losing him. And then he's like, no, this is just Nariman's feelings. I want to talk about something similar, but a little bit different. I'm going to talk about incompatible players. Both of these experiences, and I'm going to outline two situations, both of these experiences were people joining an existing group. If you have a long-standing group, this can happen. You can add players. In both of these situations, we had somebody invited to join the game that wasn't fully vetted with the whole group.
Mm-hmm.
I will say there are many different types of groups out there. My group is a group of players where we rotate GMs and games we are playing. So it's a collective. I would consider some of Jared's games that he's run. This is Jared has organized this game. He has say on who's in it. You don't want to be in it. You just say no. But it's his game. It goes when he says it goes, and it goes as long as he says it goes. Whereas my Saturday groups are, we play. Mm-hmm. We play on Saturdays when we can, and whoever can GM is the one GMing. In the first situation, we had this guy invited into the game, who I'm going to call Eeyore. Eeyore was somebody we were all friendly with, but mostly through board games and not role-playing games. And I think he had been kind of lamenting in that Eeyore way that he wouldn't mind trying to play D&D, so he got invited to play. It was not good. He wouldn't pay attention. He'd fall asleep. He wasn't engaged with the game. He was kind of there,
mm-hmm.
and occasionally he'd realize something was going on. It's, what's happening? And every time it was his turn in combat, we had to explain what was happening all over again if he wasn't asleep. And I've got nothing against people falling asleep in games because it happens. We had a woman who played with us for a while who was a med student doing her residency, and she would come to us super happy to be social without it being related to medicine or school, and she would promptly fall asleep.
Mm-hmm.
It was relaxing for her. She enjoyed what she did when she was awake, but it wasn't off-putting to the rest of us. It was like, it was fine. Mm-hmm. We're going to let her sleep, enjoy herself. This guy, though, because he'd demand to know what was going on every single time he'd realize something was happening and just wasn't engaged. And unfortunately, the GM decided to try and get him more interested by giving him some cool, shiny stuff, which ended up pissing off. Well, it pissed me off, and I assume it irritated some of the other people, but it pissed me off. I'm like, you're rewarding him for just sitting there and falling asleep. And the GM was like, yeah, but I thought it would get him interested if he had a really cool artifact. And I'm like, that's not how this is supposed to work. That's not how any of this is supposed to work. Eventually, we kind of stopped including his name on the reminder emails, and he stopped asking about game, and we just moved on without him. In the other situation, we were asked by one of the players to run a game for their friend that was interested in finding out about D&D. It was 2014, 5th edition had just come out, so we're like, yeah, sure, we'll do this playtest of 5th edition to see what it's all about and introduce your friend to role-playing games. Which was fine, but the problem was that this player of ours, they invited this guy to join our group without talking to any of us, and they did it in front of all of us. And one of the other guys was like, sure, I guess so. And then I was like, wait, what's going on? And they told me, and I'm like, no, no, this is not how we do this. You need to have a conversation with the group before you add somebody to the group. And this caused all sorts of drama with that player. They ended up dropping out of the game because of all of this. And it was not good because this friend of theirs was kind of on the creepy side, had an even creepier husband, and they weren't allowed to play anyplace else but their house.
That's a bad sign.
And this was not something we were willing to consider or engage in. I just happened to be the bad guy who stood up and said, no, this is not happening.
Yeah.
So what's your thoughts, Jared?
I have seen at least, it's weird because my gaming thing is like all the way up to when I got divorced and then I started gaming again. But from like 2000 on, I have seen this happen a couple times where someone gets invited into the group that wasn't vetted by the entire group. One time it worked real well and the person is still a good friend of mine. The other time, they sort of ended up in a clique that was part of people wanting to do things one way as opposed to people doing things the other way, and it almost felt like political maneuvering to bring this person in.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I liked from that time period that I tried to do is when I would find out that somebody was interested in joining a group, I would usually ask them to meet me at a neutral location. So like we would go to like the bookstore or a coffee shop, and then I would talk to them about like, so what are you trying to get out of a game? What kind of characters do you like? And I figured if I talked to this person for a half hour, 45 minutes, I would get a better feel for whether or not this person is going to click with the group and whether we want them hanging out with us for 4 hours a night.
Yeah, I like the idea of, and this is what we did in the second situation, run a one shot.
Mm-hmm.
It ended up being a two session thing because we didn't finish the first part of the adventure. It was whatever adventure was in the quick start rules for 5th edition. We didn't finish it, so we came back for another session. And like, yeah, we did a one shot. We introduced the guy to the D&D, and like that was going to be the end of it. When it comes down to it, that player has what I call it's one of the geek fallacies that friendship is transitive,
mm-hmm.
where if they are friends with somebody, they are friends with all of their friends.
Yeah.
And they would get very upset when that didn't prove to be true. That caused a problem and they ended up departing the group. I don't know that there is anything we could have done differently in that situation other than be aware that that's probably what they were going to do,
mm-hmm.
and invite this friend of theirs to join us. But we had no idea that they were going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It all ended up working out well in the end for us because they left the group. But in the first situation, I feel a little bad that we just kind of ghosted him. Because this is something that tends to happen in groups where there's a problem player, is the group will just, you know, it's Homer sliding uh-huh. back into the bushes, except it's the whole gaming group doing it. I've seen it happen more than once or twice. And it's hard because it is a very difficult conversation to have with somebody to tell them they're not working out with a group.
Yeah.
Because nobody wants to do that. Nobody wants to tell somebody you're not fitting in with the group or this isn't working out. So usually what ends up happening is the group like, oh, we're ending the game and moving on. And then the rest of the group just starts a new game elsewhere.
Yeah.
I wish we would have been a little more upfront with Eeyore and let him know that it just wasn't working mm-hmm. out and we would see him at board game nights, but it is what it is.
One of the things that I have learned from therapy is even if I'm non-confrontational, it is okay if you want to clarify something with someone to communicate in a means that you are comfortable with. So if you can email somebody and explain this to them, I know there will be people saying that's impersonal, you shouldn't do that. It's like, I still feel like that can be better than just not talking at all.
It's still better than ghosting them. And I mean, to be completely honest, he didn't even notice. I think the GM said the guy asked him like 6 months later, hey, whatever happened to gaming? Whatever happened to D&D? And it was like, okay, this is what we needed to do. But it was still just like, not the best way to handle that.
I also think that's just one of those things too. If you know somebody might bring somebody in, I think as a group, sometimes you just need to sit down and say, we're not adding anyone unless we all agree on it.
Yeah, and I think after that happened, everyone in the group kind of understands that at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And we do the, hey, can so-and-so join us as a guest for this session or that type of thing? But we know to have a conversation about somebody joining the group as a regular player.
My next one that I would bring up is, last time I had a conflict between two players, this is going to be a time when I had a conflict with a player. It kind of ground everything to a halt. What's really kind of amusing about this is the session before this happened, we had almost a TPK except for like two characters. No one was upset because everyone realized that mistakes were made because they were fighting zombies that had a rune on them. And they bunched all of these zombies together and then used a fireball on the zombies. The runes were all explosive runes. So they set off a chain reaction of zombies exploding one after the other. And it was funny because they were laughing because they were like, that was the dumbest thing we could have. And we were only a few sessions into this campaign. I feel bad about it, but because everybody was so okay with how this played out, it was like, no, we'll just roll with it. This is fine. We don't need to figure out, you know, some way to backtrack this or anything. This was just one of those fun adventurer stories where you tell someone that your old adventuring group blew themselves up. However, we also decided that since we were going to keep playing in the same campaign with those two players and the other like three people making new characters, that they were going to take the dwarf priest's body to be buried. And they got a note from that priest's father that was saying, you know, please take my son to this burial site. Please find a stipend of this size. Leave the body there. There will be somebody to take possession of the body. And here is some money for your trouble. That player had already established that he was an outcast from his clan. He did not get along with his father. He was worshiping a deity that his clan did not recognize. And this was something that, you know, the player and I had talked about. And this was, you know, this was all up front. We knew that this is the character. But another character in the group got upset about this. And he was saying, that's unacceptable. I, still playing the messenger that delivered this, was, what do you find unacceptable about this? That's just not right. It's not respectful. And so the messenger went through and said, well, you're going to get paid this much. You just need to deliver it here. No, he shouldn't be delivered to a place like that. Why isn't his father there? Why isn't his family here? Why don't we have people escorting us there? And I noticed he was getting more and more agitated. So eventually I kind of stopped and I was like, is this your character that is upset or are you upset? And he told me, I don't think this is right. I don't like the scenario. This isn't, you know, this was a dwarf. Dwarves work this way. This isn't the way all of this stuff should unfold. This is being disrespectful. And I was like, well, we already kind of established that, you know, that was how this character's family worked. And he was like, well, I'm not doing it. And at that point, I got a little bit upset myself because, you know, I was like, I don't know what to do with this now. I realize that you can turn this back around and say, well, here's the adventure. Would you like to play tonight or not? And what I ended up doing was I needed to walk outside. I was running at the game store, had to go outside, take a few deep breaths, kind of think about what am I going to go in there and say? So I walked back in and I said, I don't have anything else for you guys tonight. We're going to just wrap it up here and I'll figure out what we're doing and let everybody know in 2 weeks what, you know, what's going on. And I ended up having back and forth emails with this person. And eventually I sent him an email saying, I don't think that you work well with my GMing style. I am not saying that you are a bad player or that you wouldn't be great in someone else's game, but I do not think that we work well together in a group. So I think I need to ask you to leave the group. That campaign didn't last much longer after that. You know, he did leave, but everything just kind of crashed and burned at that point. And even the people that weren't upset, it was just sort of like, I don't know what we're doing anymore. Why don't, you know, like, we only have two people from the original group. Why don't we just, you know, let this all die a natural death here?
Yeah, it's unfortunate when a thing like that happens in a game. The near TPK was one thing, but having the player have such an adverse reaction to what was coming next was just, it kind of took the wind out of the sails of that game. I'm not sure what I would tell you to do differently, other than maybe step back a little sooner when the character was arguing about it and just be like, wait, I don't understand what the problem is here. Especially if you've got the player of the dwarf character right there. Like, does this make sense to you? It's like, oh, yeah, this is totally what my family would do. I would suspect that maybe the player who had the problem wasn't as okay with the near TPK as it seemed during the previous session. And this was kind of their fallout from it. And also, like, to be completely honest, we're all human beings. You don't know what was going on in that guy's life at that point.
Yeah.
The problem is some people just, once they start down a path, they just dig in and keep going regardless of whether or not it's a mistake or not.
It was interesting because during that session, one of the reasons his character survived is the first two sessions, like he could turn into a small animal and he was like, this is going to be really great because I'll scout for everybody. And his scouting was basically, I'm avoiding every fight. So it was already kind of an issue, and some of the players weren't thrilled with that because they were like, you know what? Maybe somebody else in here would have pointed out, don't group all those together. But instead, like, not that someone should save us from our own stupidity, but the other thing I was thinking too was I was trying to figure out why I reacted the way I did, because if someone tells me I don't like this in a game, can you not do it? I can take that input. This felt more like, I don't like the way you're running the game, which feels more global, I guess. It's not so much like we can work together. It's more you're doing a bad job.
Yeah, I'm you know, and like part of me is like, did the guy have a death in the family recently? Did something like that happen? It's just, for whatever reason, that particular scenario flipped him out. And it's like, I don't know what I would have done as a GM either.
Yeah, and it's not really anything that had to do with his character. It had to do with someone else's character that he was defensive for.
Yeah.
Basically, what I tried to work through this is to think, we had a session zero. By this point in time, I was definitely having session zeros. I wasn't having good session zeros because I was running at the game store. So what that meant was a lot of people would just, when I would say, hey, we're having a session zero, we're all going to get together, talk about what the campaign is going to be like, talk about what people want in it, what they don't want in it. We're going to all make sure that all of our characters fit together. I would say that, but because it was the game store, people would go over and start looking at magic cards, or people would start, you know, talking to somebody else in that was playing Warhammer. And what they heard when I said session zero is, let's hang out for a few hours and maybe by next session you'll have a character sheet to give me, which is not what I wanted. But I also didn't know how to say, stop it, sit in that seat for the next couple hours. This is an actual session.
Session Zeros exists because of the mistakes we've made in the past.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean our early Session Zeros were good.
No.
I had one where I was trying to start up a new campaign, and I was trying to establish connections between the characters to explain why they were all together doing this thing. And the players gave me such superficial connections that it made no sense why these characters were together, except for a couple of them. And it just, it ended up blowing up in my face like about four or five sessions in, where it blew up into two players having a conflict with one another. That nearly ended their friendship.
Time is a flat circle. Yeah, and I think, honestly, one of the things I learned about that, about Session Zeros was, which is what I do now, I have an agenda. I know exactly what things I want to accomplish by the end of the thing. Even to the point to where I realize, maybe you won't finish your character, but I at least need to know your species, your class, your subclass, and your background. I don't, you know, you don't have to put the numbers in yet, but I need to know those story elements before you leave.
I need to know the gist of who your character's going to be and why they're here.
Yeah. And to me, it's more important to establish the connections with each other and the setting than it is to figure out whether you're putting your 15 in strength or constitution.
It's also a good time to go over the precepts of the campaign, what you want to get out of it, what you're trying to do, you know, the general stuff. So my next problem I want to talk about are those players that just want to watch the world burn. Now, thankfully, these are few and far between, and I have never had the displeasure of having one in a campaign, but there are players out there who get a great deal of pleasure from messing with the GM and the other players at the table. By what I mean is, like, if they think the GM wants you to go left, they're going to go right. If they think a player wants to do X, they're going to do everything in their power to stop the player from doing X. They get a great deal of pleasure about being contrary and messing with things in the game. Way back many years ago, I was at a convention, and I was playing a series of connected D&D games. The concept was this was going to be a three-session game where the first game was going to be in first edition, the second game was going to be second edition, and the third game was going to be in third edition. This was well before fourth edition. It was a neat idea. I signed up for it because there really wasn't much else going on at that convention. And it turned out to not be very organized. Basically, it was organized and put together by one GM who ran the first session and then, for whatever reason, couldn't run the next two sessions, so somebody else stepped in to do it. And she wasn't a very good GM. I mean, she tried, but she wasn't a very good GM. And then we had the player who wanted to watch the world burn. The characters in this game were all siblings. It was based on some show out there where a bunch of brothers do things and they let me have a sister. It was a bunch of siblings who adventured together. I don't remember what happened in the first session. I don't remember what happened in the second session. I know the third session was where the real problem started. We were in town. We got a mission to go out and investigate a thing that was a problem. And, you know, we needed to go out there and stop this thing. And so the player who was playing the rogue was like, okay, I'm going to go get us horses. And he went and he stole us horses because he was the rogue and he wanted to play a rogue. Well, the jerk player decided that, well, he's playing a lawful good cleric, so he's going to turn his brother in to the city guard. At which point, three quarters of that game turned into the rest of us trying to get the brother out of jail and leave the city to go on the actual adventure, while the cleric kept trying to do everything in the world to stop us from doing this. It was absolutely infuriating, and the cleric player was just gleeful in how he was preventing us from actually doing anything in this game. And as I said, the GM, not the best. I don't think she saw a problem with this. I think she was just like, oh, this is what the players want to do, so this is what we're doing. And not realizing that most of us were not having fun at all. because we were just trying to get out of the city and go on the adventure and do the thing we were supposed to do. I think we were supposed to rescue some orphans. The lawful good player was doing everything in his power to stop us from doing that. It was absolutely infuriating.
Oh, I can imagine. I was going to say what I would do now, and this is not something I would always do, but I hope that I've matured enough to do this. As a GM, when I start seeing one person pull everything their direction, I would like to stop the game and say, hey, is everybody on board with this? You know, this is going to go off in this direction if this happens. I am pausing the game, and I want you to answer as players, are we all on board with it going this direction? And I say that having had convention games that I have run do this and not thought to do that because I was just so flabbergasted in the moment that the person went so far the other direction to derail everyone else at the table that I was not prepared for it. As DM muscle memory, I keep telling myself, this is what you need to do. Stop the game. Ask everybody.
Yeah, ever since then, as a GM, I try and be aware of players derailing the game or hogging the spotlight too much or getting in the way of the other players doing the things that they want to do. Because not everyone is doing it to be an asshole like that guy was.
Mm-hmm.
I must clarify that that guy was that guy. I had experiences with him later with other people, and he just turned out to be a jerk, generally interested in messing with everybody. It was very unpleasant when he was around, and it was, hey, one of those geek fallacies again.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you don't want to exclude people, so, well, he seems decent. No, he wasn't decent.
Yeah.
And eventually he burned himself out.
If nothing else, we have learned this from Mr. Spock. The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, or the one.
As a player, I should have just been like, hey, I didn't sign up for this.
Mm-hmm.
I signed up for us to go on an adventure and rescue some people. So are we going to actually get to that? Because if we're not, let me know so I can go play something else. You know, that's a little aggressive to say it that way, but my time is valuable.
Yeah, sometimes you have to advocate for yourself.
Yeah. As a GM, I just would have been, and I've actually done this in games more recently where I see a player just kind of being obnoxious to another player, and I'll just turn to the other player. I'm like, hey, do you consent to this happening to your character?
Mm-hmm.
And invariably they'll be like, oh no, I really don't want to deal with this. Okay, we're not doing that then.
Yeah.
It will very often throw off the player that was being the jerk because they didn't realize, like, some of them think they're just being funny.
Mm-hmm.
It'll throw them off because they didn't realize they were causing discomfort to anyone else at the table.
Yeah.
But they usually are. Do we have any common themes that have showed up in our stories?
The same common theme that seems to come up a lot in any kind of role-playing advice, which is role-playing is communication with other people. Therefore, we need to communicate with other people.
Have a session zero.
Yes.
If you have an ongoing group, maybe talk about your social contract.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that gets talked about a lot with gaming, but I don't think we necessarily communicate it with each other.
Yeah.
Very much, but there is definitely a social contract of sitting down at the table and gaming together. And both of the situations I talked about, and some of the ones Jared talked about, are if we had had more of a social contract about how we handle things at mm-hmm. the table, whether it's inviting players in or having a conflict with another player or the GM, we might have been able to circumvent some of those issues.
And unfortunately, a lot of these issues that I was talking about tonight came up before I was using safety tools at the table. But I wanted to bring up something about safety tools because I think sometimes when people are getting angry, they aren't thinking of themselves as being unsafe, so they don't think to use safety tools.
Mm-hmm.
They're thinking, I'm butting heads with this person. I'm not, you know, this isn't creeping me out. This isn't making me feel bad or wrong. I'm just getting angry. And that thing is when we get angry, we want to act and do things, and we don't stop to think, oh, I should pick up this little thing that I have here that says pause and show it to everybody because we need to pause.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because, you know, that's one of those cases. I don't know that sometimes anger lets us access the tools that we have as much as it should.
No, and anger is usually one of those things where you are you are not thinking straight, so you're going to make poor choices.
I would say, though, what I would take away from that is, if you're seeing anything that looks like a little bit of elevated emotional state from the way the player normally is, check in.
So, let's be honest with ourselves. Hi, it's me. I'm the problem, it's me. What's a time that you were actually the problem at the table?
All right, I'm going to have my full-on drama kid moment here. There was a Pathfinder game that I was in, and I was playing a cleric of the Goddess of Pirates, because I like pirates, and didn't fully fit in with the campaign, but it was okay because she was working as a mercenary. I had it all worked out in my head. But I had this idea that she was going to have a substance abuse problem, which is she was drinking too much, and I wanted this to be a story arc. I wanted this to be something where she realized that her drinking was a problem and she needed to work through it. I thought of this myself and did not share it with anyone. So later on, when I have the entire party just making jokes about my character drinking and laughing about it, I'm realizing I can't turn this around at this point because this is not the momentum that this story is taking, and it is not just my story.
Yeah.
So from that point on, I was having no fun with her, and I was intentionally trying to get her killed off because I'm like, I can't do anything else with this character. Now, again, if I had been not only mature enough to say I want the story arc, let's all talk about it ahead of time, but been mature enough to say, I'm not having fun playing this character, can I play another character? No, I doubled down and I was like, I'm going to go fight that were-hyena. And then she got lycanthropy and I was like, yep, she's gone.
Those type of story arcs are fantastic in fiction, but it can be very difficult to want to plan to have them at the table. I have seen stuff happen organically at a table where a character will grow from one place to another place, but intending to have them go through this thing absolutely needs to be expressed to the rest of the group.
Yeah.
And explained that that's what you want to have happen. I have a friend who, she made a character for a game based on Mazikeen from Lucifer.
Mm-hmm.
Mazikeen is a demon that kind of serves Lucifer, and she's a demon, but she kind of ends up meeting these people that kind of make her better nature come out a little bit. And my friend's desire was to explore this very dark character who kind of does the right thing anyway. And what she realized after trying to play that character is without having another character there that pulls on her the strings of her better nature, there was no reason for her character to do those things.
Exactly.
So there's sometimes these story arc fiction ideas that are really cool, but you need to do some metagaming to actually have them happen at the table.
I was kind of irresponsible with that anyway, because substance abuse is like this very serious, heavy subject, which I am not saying you can never do at the table, but I didn't check in with any of the other players to see if they had an issue with that, if maybe someone in their family had a problem with that, so they really didn't want to deal with it at the table. I didn't check in at all. I just decided this is what I'm going to do with my character because it's my character and she is 100% mine to control and to do whatever I want to with her. And that's not right. And, you know, I should have talked to the GM, but I should have also cleared this with everybody. You don't just drop a topic like that into a game without warning.
And I mean, as you saw, like the other players are like, oh, it's a joke thing. We're just going to respond to it as a joke thing, which is not what you intended.
Yeah.
But that's how they took it. As I've mentioned before on the air, both I believe here and on the Gnomecast, when I'm getting annoyed, I am a real pain in the butt to have at the table. There was a campaign a while back where it became apparent my expectations were different than the game the GM was running and what I think the other players were there to enjoy. And my irritation kind of got the best of me to the point that I probably made the game not as much fun for everyone else. Jared, you know the game I'm talking about.
Yeah, and you weren't entirely on your own because I wanted to engage a little bit more with the story instead of dwelling in the moments that were created spontaneously. So I get you, but I will admit that being less confrontational, I was not showing any of that frustration.
My friend TJ jokes that I am a pleasant, wonderful, kind person until somebody flips a switch. And the moment the switch is flipped, I don't have any way of hiding my irritation. And I think my solution for this is to try and understand my own tastes and recognize when a game isn't a good fit. This is also why when I talk about the Cygnus de Gore game, I tend to take a back seat. When I'm playing Selena, I let the other players take the lead because I know that I don't have a whole lot of patience. And if I were trying to lead the group, if I were trying to actually move the action in the game forward, I would just get frustrated. So it is better for me to just hang back and be the casual player and let them take the lead and do stuff, if that makes sense.
It does. The only other thing I would say is if you're kind of annoyed and it's, and this is, you're talking about a very personal trait, so I don't want to tell you how to act, but I'm saying in general, if someone feels similar, if you're kind of annoyed and maybe it's happened more than one session, maybe try and talk about it outside the session. And then, you know, maybe the DM isn't super invested in having these moments that everybody else is just kind of creating, and they want to get back into the story a little bit more. And now that they know some of the other players want this too, it'll kind of make them realize, oh, maybe this is what we need to do. That's about the only other thing I can say in a situation like that.
So before we wrap this topic up, I think we want to take a moment and talk about how we've talked about a lot of this from the perspective of the dungeon master, the game master, the person running the game. But it is everyone at the table's responsibility to contribute to a table being fun, safe, and good for everyone there.
Yeah.
Let's talk about how players can help with this stuff too.
I would say if you're seeing two other players getting heated, it does not need to be the GM that steps in and de-escalates the situation. In fact, sometimes it might be better if it's one of the other players that steps in and de-escalates the situation.
I'll also say that sometimes the GM has so many twirling plates in the air that they may not see the situation starting to happen that the player sitting right next to those two might be picking up on.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. The GM is, they're thinking about the adventure they're running. They're thinking about the rules. They have 4 to 6 people or however many you have in your group that are all doing things at the same time. So this stuff might sneak up on them because they are dividing their attention in a lot of places. And yeah, if you're a player and you see these two people kind of like snarking at each other all night and then they look like they're about ready to boil over, you probably have a better perspective than the GM.
In that vein, I would also say, you know, sometimes ask questions that other people may not be able to voice because either they've gotten too emotional, they're not sure about their standing in the group. You can see that somebody is having some concerns, but for whatever reason, they're not able to bring them up.
I've seen people shut down before, and I can tell they're upset, but again, the GM is running the game. All they're seeing is somebody is not talking, and that's fine right now because they have other things to do.
Yeah.
And if you're a player, you can see they have shut down. That is a whole different thing.
Yeah, I have had this happen in games where I didn't realize what was happening until after the game, where I had a player trying to tell me that they wanted to do something, but they kind of got steamrolled by a more bolder player that was kind of taking up the air in the room. And I wasn't realizing how badly that player was dominating things. And it wasn't until later that I picked up on, oh, this player is really upset because they got steamrolled and couldn't do the thing they wanted to do. And now it's too late and they're pissed at these other players. If you are a player and you're starting to see this happen, and sometimes it could just be as simple as like, oh, hey, I think so-and-so had a thing they wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
There are dominant players who tend to not realizing they're not letting anyone else get a word in edgewise. Sometimes it's not even that big, but when you see that somebody wants to do something and they can't get a word in because this other player keeps asking questions or keeps wanting to do something with their character, it's time to like step in and be like, hey, so-and-so wants to do something. Or speak up for yourself. Hey, I wanted to do such and such. Can so-and-so come with me and do it? It's the GM's job to keep the spotlight rotating, but sometimes it can get lost in the shuffle with everything else they're managing.
I did notice too, when I started like playing it a little bit more and a little bit more games at more conventions and things like that, I was a lot more likely to see someone else and say, hey, did you want to say something as a player, not as a GM?
Yeah.
Like you're saying, sometimes the GM just doesn't pick up on it. And when you see it, sometimes it doesn't take much. It just takes somebody saying, I think they had an idea, you know, and then it introduces it and everybody's good again.
Yes.
I also think sometimes to take the pressure off the DM, you need to let them know what you're okay with. For example, like if you have had a party that has done something completely wild and off track, and it is clearly not what anybody could have expected would have happened, don't necessarily look at the GM and say, okay, what's next? That's a good time to tell them, hey, I think this is a good stopping point. I had fun tonight. We can stop a half hour early, an hour early. We've got 2 good hours in, and this was a lot of fun. Just to let them know, you don't have to come up with an entirely new scenario on the spot just because we did something stupid.
Not even stupid. Sometimes it's the players just doing something that you didn't expect.
Oh, yeah.
Although I will say, as a GM, I have gotten to the point where if the players just completely want to disregard what I've prepped, I'll be like, okay, that's fine. But that means we're done for tonight because I don't have anything else for you guys. Usually that means, okay, fine, we'll go this way. And like, if you have an idea for a solution and can respectfully offer it to the group or the GM or the players that are having the issue, if everyone's calm enough to hear it, go for it. Gaming is a collaborative experience for everyone at the table.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes we need everyone to pitch in to make that situation work.
Yeah, and I think that's one of those things where when someone presents it as an absolute, that is not how this rule works, as opposed to somebody else saying, oh, the other day I was just looking through here and I saw the same situation. I think they handled it this way. You don't have to, but that's where it's at in the book.
Yeah.
And then it's not shoving it in someone's face saying, this is how you must do it.
I personally love the what I call the cooperative rules lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
They're the players at the table that know the rules better than I know them, but they're not going to override me if I make a decision.
Yep.
So there'll be times where I'll be like, hey, how's this supposed to work? And they'll share it with me. And other times I'll be like, no, we're just going to do it this way for now. And they'll be like, okay, fine. It's like, if you can be one of those players, it can really help your GM out.
Yeah, I was going to say, as a GM, I've been running 5th edition for quite a while now, and there are still classes where I don't know how certain things work in those classes because I haven't had a lot of people at the table that have those classes, or I haven't played them myself. So I appreciate the person that's like, this is how the ability is supposed to work. You know, instead of panicking and thinking that I need to know all of it, it's okay for other people to be able to be the expert for a while. Well, I think we're done looking at other people's mistakes and especially done looking at our own.
So many problems, so many mistakes.
No time for rest, you two. Get on with your downtime research.
Every episode, we're going to look for something related to D&D that we want to pass along to our listeners. It might be products, websites, videos, or podcasts, but it'll always be something that we think will enhance your D&D experience.
So, Cubicle 7 has a Kickstarter currently running for Victoriana 5th Edition, which is a project I am very excited about because I wrote an adventure for it.
Yay!
Victoriana is a long-running setting for Cubicle 7 that mixes steampunk and fantasy together. The newest edition uses 5th edition SRD, so it should be an easy game for D&D fans to pick up. One of the books that is included in the Kickstarter is Dreadful Inquiries, which is a collection of 5 interconnected adventures that will take characters from 1st level to 5th level. And I had a hand in writing one of these, which I believe when I was writing it is supposed to be the middle adventure for 3rd level, but I don't quote me on that. I don't know what the final form of the book is going to look like. I'm very proud of the adventure I wrote because it explores a very cool location with a mystery for the investigators to solve. And of course, while I have personal reasons to get excited about this one, I'm also excited to try and run some good steampunk fun with 5th edition rules.
I'm very interested in it. 1, because I want to see your adventure. And 2, because I think this is going to be where we see some of the tweaks they might be making in their C7 D20 version of 5e.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of curious to see if there's anything that you can glean from that too out of this game.
Yeah. The Kickstarter at this point has already funded. As of the day we're recording this, it started, and it has 20 days to go. So there will still be more than enough time after this episode drops.
So go back it.
Go back it.
I wanted to bring up something that you can spend your money on, because I am nothing if not an endless well of money that has been spent on things that shouldn't be. I had an email from Beetle and Grimms because I signed up for their newsletter, and there are 50th anniversary dice sets that are coming out. And what these dice sets are is there are dice boxes that are lined so that you can use them to roll the dice in. They have themed dice of different colors, and the outside of the dice boxes are made to look like classic adventures. So there is a Ravenloft, a Tomb of Horrors, Vecna Lives, White Plume Mountain, Temple of Elemental Evil, and Expedition to the Barrier Peaks. And each one of them has a different, you know, color theme to them. So Ravenloft is red with black numbers. White Plume Mountain is blue with orange numbers. These things look really cool. The boxes look really cool. Now I will hit you with the sticker shock. The whole set of them is what they're selling in the pre-order. They aren't selling them individually yet. $225.
Oh.
Now, I will say, though, it's Beetle and Grimms. So they make really nice high-end stuff. And not only are the dice boxes lined and the dice are nice, because I actually do have a set of their dice, and it looks like it's the same base type of die that they use. But each set is going to have an oversized D20 that is clear, that's in the same color. So like it's a red clear dice with black, you know, with all the solid ones for like the Ravenloft. But on top of all of that, there's also like art cards showing different images from that adventure. And there is a metal token for each of these adventures that has an image of something from the adventure on it. And then 50th anniversary of D&D on the back. So if you want a coin with Strahd's face on one side, this is your opportunity.
Oh, man.
The only thing that I will say that I'm slightly disappointed in is some of their other sets do this thing where they say, like, we're going to give you 46 because you're a cleric and you use Guiding Bolt a lot. So there's multiples of certain dice. This one is just the standard dice set plus the extra large D20 in it. It's not a deal breaker for me. It's just I've gotten used to a lot of these dice sets having those extra dice, you know, that you use very often. It's not enough to not make me tempted by this thing, though. So we are going to have a link to those dice if you want to, like me, contemplate throwing a couple hundred dollars after this.
I mean, not unless I win the lottery, but there you go. So we have one last thing we wanted to share with you in this section of our show. We are launching a Patreon. Thacko with Advantage is going to have a Patreon that's going to be offering you different content from us and supporting another show that's coming out related to us. And it's going to be very cool. There is one level to back. It's $5 a month. And check it out, because it's at patreon.com/thack0wa. So THAC0WA. There's going to be a lot of cool content for our listeners that's going to be there, that's not just listening to us talk about stuff.
Yep, there's going to be neat little game rule things that, you know, PDFs and things of that nature that you'll be able to get. We want to love you, so we want to give you a chance to love us even more in a different way. So please patronize us.
We We are happily part of the Polygamers Podcast Network, helping you run and play your best games. We think you'll enjoy another Polygamers podcast like...
Pandas Talking Games. We're gamers talking about tabletop role-playing games and making outtakes. Join Pandas Phil and Senda every other Wednesday, answering listener questions about playing, running, and designing TTRPGs. It's like Car Talk, but for your games.
We have used up all of our resources, so I think it's time for a long rest. I hope this adventure was rewarding for you, and we hope you'll go exploring with us when we start our next adventure.